a microscope, an atom, a tree, a fig leaf, and a TV. It's David Suzuki. Of course, it's David Suzuki. He has been the host of the CBC series The Nature of Things since 1979. That is over 40 years of David helping people understand the natural world a bit better. He's also been a pioneer in teaching folks about environmental issues like deforestation and climate change. And tonight, David is being recognized with a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Canadian Screen Awards. Tom Power recently caught up with David Suzuki on Canada's beautiful West Coast at his cabin on Quadra Island.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
It's lovely to have you. How's it all going out there? I'm very jealous of your of the life you're living out there.
Well, you should be, but I'm not going to get into it too much or everybody is going to want to come out here. Yes, I feel in many ways COVID has given me a great gift. You see, on March 13th in 2020, I was up here with my two daughters and their families, and we were kicking off spring break. And right after we got here, the lockdown order came. Our oldest daughter took off to get back to Haida Gwaii, where she lives with her husband, and the islands were locked down completely shortly after she got there. But I stayed with my youngest daughter and her three young children and her husband for 6 months. We had 6 months of total isolation. And every morning, I was on the morning shift. I'd be up at 6. Kids came in like clockwork at 6:30, 6:45. I'd have to feed them, clothe them. And rain or shine, we're out hitting the beaches, the tide pool, the forest. And, you know, it was just the most incredible time of my life. At my age, I had a reason to be around. I had a job.
Hey, you want me to give him rabies, Nick?
Act professional, Relent. This is a job.
What's a job to a dog?
And it was the best job in the world. It was the happiest 6 months I have ever spent in my life. And the other thing is, you know, at my age, having been in the environmental battles all these years, you get pretty bloody cynical and depressed about the state of the world. I've seen so much disappear in my lifetime. The kids don't know that. They've only inherited the world they're in. And so every day when I go out, when we find a snake or a frog or a salamander, it's a great discovery and a celebration. You know, we go down the tide pool and there are sand dollars and...
Millions of months passed, and 28 days later, the moon appeared. This small change was reflected best, perhaps, in the sand dollar, which shrank to almost nothing at the bottom of the pool, where even dumb amphibians like catfish laid their eggs in the boiling waters, only to be gobbled up every 3 minutes by the giant sea orphans and jungle bunnies, which scared everybody.
There are hermit crabs and moon snails, and the world is wonderful when you look at it through the innocent eyes of my children, grandchildren. And so I am so grateful to them for that opportunity to discover the world is still a wonderful place.
Mick Jagger playing on the jukebox, ducks struggling in oily water, cars going by loud and out of place, 55-year-old workmen who know how to fix their campers, handing buckets of crap to hippies and taking buckets of crap from hippies, and me crying in a Mexican cafe because I can feel paradise so close now for everybody. I think we got most of the birds out of the south end of the bay, he says, taking off his pink anodized hard hat and wiping some sweat off his forehead right where his thinning pack of black-gray hair begins. The hippie is falling asleep over his coffee. Across the street, in front of the Sunset Beauty Salon, the sidewalk is turning gray and shifting and melting as 1,000 years pass and flowers and Indian tobacco and sage and people looking a little Chinese spring up out of the street. The beauty salon is a field now with two people making love by a brown rock. I'll cry any day for that. My vision starts in my feet and goes down, so my crying is really like rain. My tears make the years pass like a rush. My tears make the seeds grow under Sunset Boulevard. The clump of cane by the brown rock is the 1,000-year-old child of my tears, and that boy is a 1,000-year-old child, of that hard hat and that girl filled with him, her sweet self coming with a cry in the California clay, is the thousand-year child of that hippie. And the Ducks made it, too. So don't despair. Learn to hold back and let it out like the Stones' guitar. The war is over. We're home. And when we all wake up, we'll all be friends. Dear friends.
And I'm more determined than ever to fight to try to protect a bit of it so that they can enjoy it when they have their grandchildren.
Well, that was the question I was going to ask you when you said my grandchildren are able to see the beauty in this life and not the cynical way that I see the world. I was going to ask, are you able to see it through their eyes? And what does that do to you? What does it look like when you see it through their eyes?
Well, it's still a marvel, you know. And let me tell you, we have a well for our water. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure on it when you got all these kids and everybody's taking a bath and washing dishes and all that. So we have to use our water very carefully, taking brown, you know, gray water and putting it on the garden or flushing toilets with it. And every morning when I got up at 6, I would perform my usual ritual of having a pee. But now I didn't want to use a toilet. I peed outside.
We're going back to the shadows again. Out where an Indian's your friend.
Going down.
Where the vegetables are green. And you can pee right into the stream. And that's important. We're back from the shadow again.
Now, I love time lapse, which speeds up, you know. If you look at a starfish sped up, suddenly they're moving and touching each other. And, you know, you can see a seed sprouting or a flower suddenly bloom. I love that kind of time lapse. But up here, we had all the time in the world. I don't have to cut out time. So as I was peeing, I could watch this bush turn from just naked branches. Suddenly little buds appear and green appears and, you know, over time, it's suddenly this little shrub of green where every leaf is looking up at the sun and saying, give it to me. I want that sunlight. And there I pee on this on the ground. And I know that the roots there are absorbing some of that liquid and some of the nutrients and feeding every one of the leaves. And, you know, you begin to look at the world in a radically different way because I'm not in a hurry.
See that bear lapping up that good old country water? Sure makes a big hairy guy like me thirsty. That's when I wrap my lips around that tall, sweaty, edible bottle of good old country Bear Whiz beer. As my daddy said, son, it's in the water. That's why it's yellow. Bear Whiz beer.
Bear Whiz beer, a liquid product of Andrew Bear Whiz Brewery, Animal, Missouri.
I don't have to get rid of it. One of the problems we face today is we're so goddamn anxious to get things done, you know, jump in a plane and we want it to be a jet so I can get there faster. COVID slowed everything down and it was wonderful. And I got to watch the miracle of the unfolding of this cycle of life again, you know, and after a while, white blossoms occur and suddenly in the morning I go out to pee and I hear sounds, the sounds of insects and bumblebees coming by. And then before there's there's a berry appearing. And anyway, it's
beautiful.
It's just been a marvelous slowdown in my life here.
I'm bad for this. I don't know if you are too, but I'm bad for this one. Like looking, I'm on the radio, so I should say, like looking down at the phone. And I find myself, this pandemic, I kind of just got fed up with it. And I read a great book called How to Do Nothing by Jenny O'Dell. And it sort of like changed my perspective on doing nothing, that doing nothing is a beautiful, nourishing thing. And I tell you how I can relate to you on this. I remember being in the park and looking at the trees swaying in the wind. And I thought to myself, why wasn't I looking at this for 34 years? Like, this is better than television, man. You know what I mean? Like just watching trees.
Exactly. You know, I tell the story when Rio, one of my grandchildren, was born. I was pushing him in a buggy. I had about a 3-kilometer route that I'd push him on. And at one point, lots of joggers and bicyclists and walkers going by. And I suddenly said, Rio, look there. And we pushed the buggy up to this tree. And right in a low branch was this giant barn owl.
In a faraway forest, there's a dark, deep well. Near the well there is grass that is called Sleep Well. In the night to the well comes a big black owl, and he puts some grass into a big black bowl. And he pours in some water from the dark, deep well and prepares a drug with a nice, sweet smell. And he flies to the children and he gives them a drink. And they get very sleepy and begin to wink. If you ask me, my darling, you'll go to the owl and I'll tell it, Black Owly, be a nice, kind fowl. Give me, please, for my baby, from your drug just a sip, and my baby will drink it, and will sleep, sleep, sleep,
sleep, memory, Dr. Memory!
Memory!
Now, I don't know about you, but I've not seen many wild barn owls in my life. So I'm busy snapping pictures and exclaiming to my grandson. And there must have been dozens of people that went by running or biking or doing. Not one bothered to stop and say, what are you looking at? Or even look at what I was busy taking pictures of. We're so goddamn busy that we don't have time to see what's going on in the world around us.
I think that leads us well to the nature of things, because at the same time, because it feels like taking advantage of our natural disposition towards wanting to be entertained and wanting to show us nature through that disposition. And before we talk about how you do that, I want to acknowledge that this award is a long time coming in a couple of ways. One is it's a long time coming in your long, illustrious career in media. Another, it's a long time coming because you actually got it last year and it's taken them a year to figure out how to give it to you. So what does this award mean to you?
Well, you know, awards, I always feel, don't go to the right people, you know, beginning with my mom and dad who taught me everything about the values that I have. And the roots of my environmentalism really lie in the fact they were married in the heart of the Great Depression. And because of that, that time shaped their values that they just pounded into the heads of me and my sisters, you know, save some for tomorrow, live within your means, share, don't be greedy, help your neighbors. You'll one day need their help. Work hard for the necessities in life, but don't run after money. As if having more money or fancy clothes or a car makes you a better, more important person. Those are things that really I value very much because they shaped the way that I look at the world around. And then through my life, you know, I've been made possible by all of the people that have helped me in so many different ways. You know, what does the award mean?
Well, Jerry, our next famous fall guy is still putting his art in cans from Canada to Kashmir. Winner of the Academy's coveted Good Sport Award in 1956 for Excellence in Hollywood, meet George Leroy Tirebiter.
Hubba, hubba, George. What a suit. Well, it's nice to see you looking like you're back on your feet again, George, and ready to play our little game again.
Thank you very much.
George, first a tip for our viewers, maybe. How does an old man like you stay alive?
Well, sir, I try to get up every morning and watch television all day, Mr. Yellow.
Do you have a special diet, George?
I don't eat.
You don't eat?
No, but it hasn't affected my appetite.
Well, George,
you don't have any little groat clusters I could chew on, maybe, do you?
Later, George.
There are just so many things that made me possible. I'm just a small part of it. But two groups, I think, that really deserve this award as much as anything. First, the CBC. Thank you, CBC, for keeping me on air as long as you have. Because believe me, over the years, you know, as we've done shows on forestry, on the pharmaceutical industry, the fossil fuel industry, the nuclear industry, they've taken a lot of shots, and they've had the call to get that guy off the air, and they've hung in there with me, and I'm so grateful to the CBC for that. But the other thing, of course, is we would have been dumped a long time ago if our audiences had dropped. Our numbers have kept us on air all these years, and I thank the Canadian public for, and I love I love it when I meet people and say, my grandma used to tell me, you should watch the nature of things. Or I had a parent that always said, hey, it's nature of things time. Let's watch this show together. I love that. And it's a tribute to the Canadian public that they felt the show was important and entertaining enough to hang in there and watch. So it's not me. It's the Canadian public, I think, that's recognized the value of the show. Thank you, all Canadians, for keeping us on air.
Come in, but I would advise you to leave your man outside.
But without Monsieur Benway, I should be lost.
Il est necessary que je remain ici here.
Ah, Canadian.
I would make a pretty good bet that these people who come up to you and say, my grandmother used to gather us around the television, let's watch the nature of things, you know, the people who are keeping the show in the air, they themselves do not have PhDs in environmental science or in biochemistry or in marine biology. I want to know where your interest in explaining the scientific world, the natural world, to people without scientific backgrounds comes from.
That's a good question. The person most responsible for my contribution as a public figure was my father. My father always said, you know, the trouble with Japanese Canadians is they're so humble and so shy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, this morning at 6:25 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, combined elements of the Imperial Japanese Navy and our forces ruthlessly attacked our naval base at Pearl Harbor in the Hawaiian Islands. I have conferred this morning with the Congress and the Chiefs of Staff in emergency session. We have reached our rendezvous with destiny. It is our unanimous and irrevocable decision that the United States of America unconditionally surrender.
They don't. If you want to succeed in Canada, you have to get up and be ready to say something and be able to do it well. And he made me enter public speaking contest. I don't even know if there still are such things as oratorical contests anymore. But he made me go into these things, and then he trained me.
Go ahead. All right, here we go. Is more than a day.
Louder.
It's more than a day.
No, do it again.
The fort is more than a day to just barbecue a bucket of kinks and chug along a bootful of barley. It's a special thing. 100 years ago today, on this very spot, Bilville erected this gallows.
What?
Flagpole. And hung its first mayor, proudly. And we're still hot.
What do you think?
Tommy, don't improvise the thing about the gallows. That's not my thing.
It's really awful. It just sucks.
Hey. No, it's just not.
Hey, I was just changing you, okay? Let's finish it up. All right. Blah, 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 blah. Vote for me and go home.
All right.
People hear me over the wind.
Beautiful.
Like, my speech written out every night after work, after dinner, down in the basement, and I'd have to get up and give it to him. You'd have to memorize. If I forgot a word or a line, he'd be sitting there with my speech. He'd be going through it. If I, you know, missed a line, go back to the beginning and start over again. And he might say, wait a minute now, this is the most important part of the speech. So before you get to it, you got to slow down and then use your hands and emphasize the way that comes across. Go back and start over and do that again.
Thank you, fellow kids. Quiet. In addressing for the assembly this morning, thank you. I am recalling the words of the founder of Morse Science High School, Yucaipa Heap, who pressed the first bricks with his own hands. Knowledge for the people, he said. Give them a light, and they'll follow it anywhere. We think that is a fair and a wise guy, a rule to be guided by.
What is reality?
And we're not afraid of it, are we?
Eat it!
You bet.
Eat it raw!
Raw, raw, raw. That's the spirits we have here. Okay, so come on, kids. Line up, sign up, and re-enlist today. Because we need more schooling, for more students, for more science. Hi!
And night after night, I'd end up just crying in frustration at doing this goddamn speech over and over. But by the end of it, I can tell you, if he woke me up at 3 a.m. and said, give the speech, I could give it perfectly. And I thank my dad for that. And Dad always took an interest in my education. You know, when I went away to college in the States, whenever I met him, he'd say, well, what did you learn in these subjects, you know? And he was always interested.
Howdy there, colorful replica of America's past. When is the exciting in its primitive splendor snake dance going to take place?
It's usually in August, but with all our children off in Indian school, there's no one left to do the ceremonies.
Hiya, Pop. I'm home.
Hello, Soaring Eagle. It's good to have you back from school.
Oh, come on. Call me Eddie. I'm an American now.
What have they been teaching you?
Just what we need for a better life. French horn, Italian, water polo.
Yes, at the Custer Memorial Indian School, Eddie's one of our prize students. We're giving him away next week.
And when I started in television, he always would say, well, you know, I watched that show and damn it all, you know, he said, I only went to high school, but I didn't understand a word you were saying. Now, what the hell are you trying to say? So he'd give me hell if I got. And so I always think of my father as my audience member, my loyal fan, but who would tell me in no uncertain terms if we got too fancy with our terms. So I thank them very much for training me along this course.
That being said, there's been a lot of things you've had to do, which I mean, it's fun to kind of do the research for this interview and to see all the sort of positions you've put yourself in the interest of putting something like this on television. I think I saw you wearing nothing but a fig leaf. I saw you doing a script from, or like, you know, hosting the show while skydiving. If I'm not mistaken, from midair. Is this something you have to be coaxed into doing?
The fig leaf show. The idea for the show was mine originally. Our ratings were dropping because there were multiple channels opening up. And I remember coming in and saying to my boss, Jim Murray, the executive producer, Jim, I've got a great idea for a show we could do. You know, most men know nothing about the most important organ in their body. We should do a show on the penis. And he said, Suzuki, you know,
Why don't we sing something?
Well, I've forgotten the key.
Oh, that's all right. I've got a lid out in the car.
In no way, he turned me down. Then we got a new executive producer after Jim retired. And I told him we should do it. And right away, he said, that's a great idea. And so we did a show called Fallacies, spelled P-H-A-L-L, which got a dynamite rating. But as we were going to shoot one of the intros to it, Halisha Glucksman, who was a publicist at the time, threw me a fig leaf and said, hey, Suzuki.
How did you get in here? You don't have a key?
No, only half a key.
What?
I had to split it with a sound effects man.
Oh.
If you can, get a shot with just wearing the fig leaf. I thought it was a crazy idea, but I was willing to try. And it just happened at that time I was heavily into running and just trying to get into shape. So I didn't look too bad. And I remember my daughter, who was in high school at the time, that shot just went all across the country. I was astounded at the publicity that it got. And my daughter was mortified. She came into high school and all of the kids are going and making fun of her because her old man was exposed as a naked guy. But God, got a lot of publicity.
What other organ in your body has stood up for you like your dick?
Well,
Well, certainly not your heart. Yeah, that organ gets broken when you're young. It breaks for good just before you die.
Right. It's not your liver. That wimp can't handle the massive amounts of alcohol you're drinking because you're depressed over neglecting your dick.
Yeah, it's not your balls. I mean, they're important, but only as handmaidens to your dick. You know what Bly said? A pair of able-bodied seamen ready to pass the buckets when it's time to put out the fire.
Yeah, don't tell me your best friend is your brain because you don't have a brain. No, if you did, it would have told you long ago to listen to your dick. And by now, you'd be living like a swell, sniffing the rest of the world.
Hey, did you know the Academy of Urology announced that a daily wank reduces the onset of prostate cancer by 40%?
Really? No, kidding.
You'd be a jerk not to listen to them and get hands-on about it right away.
Your dick is your handle to success.
Yeah,
Our president is a total dick.
Oh, yeah.
And his vice president's been a dick all his life.
I never thought of that.
That's right. Hey, give me the stick.
Here you go.
Now, is this the message? Stop hiding your dick in your pants?
Yeah,
right. Unzip your trip? Yeah. Start hanging out with the Yang crowd?
Yeah, put a flag on it for the 4th of July. You know, hear the girls say,
"Who's that patriotic prick?"
It's your dick, buddy. Your one eye on the world. Let it lead you around, and it'll take you into dark and mysterious places where few men dare to go.
Cut. Schlong.
Schlong.
Dong.
Weenie.
Weenie.
Dork.
Pork.
Or Mr. Johnson.
Yeah. Hey, whatever you call it at the end of the long pull, it's the one straight friend you can't rub the wrong way.
Your dick, the member to remember.
Don't forget it either.
The time I was in the air, that was a really terrifying shot because I had never been shown, I'd never skydived, and I had never been shown, no one instructed me on what to do, but I was wearing a parachute. And all they said is, if you fall, pull this cord. And I did the stand-up. Actually, I was in a plane, and the cameraman was in another plane. We were flying parallel, and I got out on the strut and did it. It never occurred to me that I might really fall, because the whole thing was a joke in that while I did the stand-up on the plane, flying in the air, then they cut to what I said to me on the same strut, but we were on the ground, and the camera widened out to show that we were on the ground.
This is it, Danny. Charlie's got a fix on us. Incoming! We gotta lighten the load. Captain Morgan's dead. Hanoi Jane has gotta go. Push her out.
No, no.
Do it, soldier. That's an order.
Come fly.
Sure. Okay, I will. Take my hand.
Hello. Don't worry.
We're camels in the wind. 100 ticks to the ground. They ought to impact with some lucky foundling in about. Hold it. Hold it.
Happy New Year, happy!
They're flying. She's got wings. Do you copy? Oh, my God. They're heading straight for the Golden City on the other side of midnight. That's got to be a happy ending. We're at minus 60 and counting. I'm heading home.
And that was kind of a foolhardy thing that we did. And I'm glad that we didn't actually have to pull the plug or pull the chute.
It's a really amazing thing to be able to do, right? To be able to make things like drugs, make things like, plants, you know, make things like photosynthesis interesting for people.
Well,
you know?
That's a good point. I've always said on the nature of things, we could do a show on the sex life of oysters and get a dynamite rating.
Animals without backbones hid from each other or fell down. Clamosaurs and oysterettes appeared as appetizers. Then came the sponges, which sucked up about 10% of all life. Hundreds of years later, in the late devouring period, fish became obnoxious. Trailer bikes, chigger bites, and mosquitoes collided aimlessly in the dense gas. Finally, tiny edible plants sprang up in rows, giving birth to generations of insecticides and other small dying creatures.
We have become so disconnected from the world around This, I think, is a great, you know, the secret of success of the great natural history person, David Attenborough. All these years, you know, he's just been the representation of nature, taking us to the most exotic places. But you don't have to go to exotic places because we're so disconnected. And when people find out, like, how oysters mate or how a pearl is made, they're fascinated. And there's no problem getting an audience, it seems to me, when you talk about nature, because we're so disconnected.
I've always had a little bit of an issue when people talk about environmentalism or environmental issues. It's like, it's not another thing. Like, it's not another thing. It's not a separate, it's not like a car or a dog. It's everything.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
This weekend at the Memorial Armory, Bear Whiz Beer is proud to present
the Everything You Know Is Wrong Expo.
It's a new age festival of ignorance.
It's a hopeful feast of mindless fellowship.
This weekend
at the Memorial Armory.
The Everything You Know Is Wrong Expo.
Crop circles.
Strange holes in the ground.
Things that aren't even there.
People watching you.
Voices only you can hear.
Hopes.
Fears. Imaginings.
The Everything You Know Is Wrong Expo is a whole Slaffer Enterprises production.
Plus, Ginzu Pyramid Slicing Knife free.
So sharp, it cuts itself.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. We act as if the environment is out there. Indeed, when I started my career in the environment issue, that's 1962. I thought of it as the environment's out there. We're here. We've just got to regulate that the way we interact. In 1962, there was no environment department in any government on the planet.
Stay with me now as we meet our first guest, Kenneth Hinton, the daring Hinton family, and the all-pro Super Bowler himself, Bobby Robbins. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, Sam.
Now, what's this I hear about you writing a book?
Yeah, here it is. It's about ecology, and it's called Eat Dirt.
Ecology? I'm so interested in that. Well, what is it?
It's in a book here, what you're asking, which I wrote with this guy who had wrote it. Ecology means echo.
Means echo?
Yeah, everything bounces off from everything else, like in a game.
Hmm. And how can a book like this affect future generations?
Well, there's nice picture of little bears in here, and a little dead raccoon, and it'll affect the future generations of my house, my kids, directly, if you buy the book.
That sounds fascinating.
Huh? And there's a pack
of
razor
blades. Well, that's it, Bobby.
So, you know, I was saying we need more environment departments, we need more laws, we need to regulate and enforce the laws. But what Indigenous people taught me, and that's when we did a show on the fight over logging in British Columbia, 1980, they said, there is no environment out there, for God's sakes. It's in us. We are the environment. It's as much a part of us as anything. And that I think is what we have to realize. If we keep thinking of ourselves as separate, then it's as if there's no consequence of dealing with that as something different from us. And, you know, we're getting us into a pickle.
Good afternoon, Mr. Danger. I'm Rocky Rococo.
Thanks, Half Pint. You just saved me a lot of investigative work.
Maybe yes, maybe no. Do you know what this is?
I had to think for a minute. What cruel game was he playing?
That's a brown paper bag.
That's correct. Now, look inside, Mr. Danger. What do you see?
That's easy. That's a pickle.
Where the problem is so great now with climate and species extinction that we're going to think, well, we've got to take it all over and we've got to, you know, geoengineer the planet. That is, we're going to find the solutions. You know, we're going to spray particles in the atmosphere that will deflect light from the sun so it'll help cool the earth. Or we're going to take the emissions and pump it into the ground and hope it'll stay down there. We think we're so smart, but we've created this enormous problem, and we're not going to be able, because we're not smart enough, we're not going to be able to engineer our way out of it.
David, well, maybe this answers the question. You're 85 now?
Afraid so.
No chance of slowing down, I can tell, in terms of getting this out there.
Can't. It's my job. You know, I feel that this is the most important period of my life. I mean, whatever happens in the next few years, if I survive that long, really a very little effect on me. But I feel that at this moment, I've lived an entire life. God damn it, I have learned a lot. Every elder who survived into elderhood, they have had experiences. They have learned, they have watched, they have seen things happen. Damn it, we've got a job now to sift through the life for those experiences that are worth passing on to our children and grandchildren so that they don't repeat the same mistakes that we've made, that they will take advantage of the things that we saw as real opportunities. So elders, I think, at this stage, this is the most important, the most exciting period of my life. And I'll tell you what COVID has taught me is that most of the people who have died from the virus are old people. And most of the ones that died were hived away in long-term care homes, for-profit care homes, where when profit comes before everything else, you know, they cut corners. Most of the elders who died under conditions they shouldn't have been living under, isolated, alone, and with little involvement with other people. I think the tragedy of the COVID crisis has been those people who should be the most respected, the most revered people in society, the people who have so much to contribute to us, that they died the way they did. That is really tragic. I hope when we emerge from this, that we will begin to change the way that we treat our elders.
Here, Injun, you want some fire water?
No. We were warned by our elders not to drink anything that would make us weak or silly.
Put it in their well.
That's not a well. It's the eye of the holy serpent mound on which you're standing.
It's a butte.
No, it's a mound.
And right purty, too. Can you move it?
But why?
Railroad's coming through. Right now.
In a way that takes advantage of what they have learned over a lifetime.
A good ending, given that this is a Lifetime Achievement Award, which normally comes with the end of the career, being able to sit back and relax and look back. And nothing gives me greater joy than to know that you have no intention of doing that.
Thanks so much.
Take heart, dear friends. We are passing through the darkening of the light. We're going to make it, and we're going to make it together. Don't get ground down by cynicism. Don't let depression darken the glass through which you look. This is a garden we live in, a garden seeded with unconditional love. And the tears of the oppressed, and the tears of the frustrated, and the tears of the good will spring those seeds. The flag has been waved. It says occupy. Occupy Wall Street. Occupy the banks. Occupy the nursing homes. Occupy Congress. Occupy the big law offices. Occupy the lobbyists. Occupy yourself. Because that's where it all comes together. I pledge to you, from this moment on, whatever it means, I'm going to occupy myself. I love you. See you tomorrow.